financial feminist. The financial feminist. Now it's time for the financial feminist.
Welcome to the Financial Feminist Podcast. I'm your host, the Financial Feminist, and this is our podcast where we take a look at global feminist wins. But I'm recording this from, and I acknowledge, the Gadigal of the Eora Nation. They're the traditional custodians of the land I'm recording the episode on, and I pay my respects to elders past and present. Now, I am recording this from Gadigal country in Australia, and my perspectives are formed as someone who loves chatting about money. Honestly, you can't stop me talking about it. And I really want to ensure that your gender isn't a determinant of your quality of life. The information we'll be discussing is not professional advice, though, because we don't take into account your personal financial circumstances. And that's why we'd always suggest talking to a licensed financial professional, particularly one based where you are, who can give you that more personalized advice. For our Aussie listeners, we've linked that register of financial advisors on our website, thefinancialfeminist.com. On with the podcast. Today, we're going to be looking at some news stories and examining those financial and feminist twists within them. Let's look at some feminist and financial news making headlines this week with me, your host, the Financial Feminist. For our first story, I want you to think back of how you were first inspired to seek out what you wanted in life. That might be from famous women at the time you idolized, from community leaders you could see yourself in, or from the parents of yourself or your friends who were kind and stopped to talk to you and ask you what you wanted to be. These people can help us see what we don't know yet is possible when imagining a future for ourselves and the life we want to start shaping ahead of us. That also includes what society says is possible for us, based on documents or legislation, including the Constitution, which would outline our rights and responsibilities as citizens. Whether we prove that right or not is another thing, and for Irish women listening, I hope you prove yours wrong. That's because a dual referendum in the Republic of Ireland on defining family and women's roles in the Constitution was defeated after International Women's Day. Like many constitutions, it was an old document dated from 1937, and the two reforms would have done two things. You may want to have a quick intake of tea or coffee at this point if you've got one in hand. Firstly, to expand the definition of family from marriage to include durable relationships and acknowledging that not everyone gets married. That is a bit of a hard sell in Ireland, where religion is for some citizens still a core part of life, but that is more in keeping with modern times. And secondly, to replace the language around a mother's duties in the home with a clause recognising family members provide care to one another in the home, and that's not just the role of the mother. This is a core feminist issue, and Al Jazeera's reporting puts it really well in that campaigners against the change sold the notion that women and mothers were being cancelled from the Constitution, which for anyone who's watched The Handmaid's Tale, where mothers are prized in the same way you might prize a show-winning cow, doesn't necessarily mean that you actually value mothers beyond what they can do for you. The Guardian also articulated that the referendum was defeated in the context of other recent referendums, including the 2015 same-sex marriage referendum and 2018's abortion referendum that had a huge turnout in Ireland and underscored Ireland's more secular liberal transformation as a country. And unfortunately, part of the reason for the referendum's failure might have been a failure of the government to listen to the alternative wording. And that might have alleviated people's fears about complications from expanded definitions of a relationship and who has responsibility for care duties at home. It's a financial issue because there's no question that identifying a woman's life within the home or a mother's duties within the home are really not in keeping with modern times, particularly in households where a woman works more than her male partner or doesn't have the duties in the house to the same extent that they do. What happens too in households where there aren't mothers, there are two fathers? It really needs to keep into account that we are in a different time to 1937, and unfortunately the wording has not kept up with that. The BBC interviewed Orla O'Connor, the director of the National Women's Council, who identified the terms being used currently in the Constitution as, and I quote, "at the heart of cruel discriminatory policies such as the marriage bar, which force women out of their careers once they got married. They had to curtail their dreams and ambitions, and many are still facing inadequate pensions and income in old age because of it." That marriage bar idea, we had that in Australia too. And as a quick reminder, it required women to quit their jobs if they chose to get married, something that was never required of men. Unfortunately, part of the issue too for why this constitution change wasn't successful was financial. Because the wording change was so unclear and some disability campaigners argued against the change because the rewording of care responsibilities was, and I quote, an attempt by the state to reduce its obligation to funding particular services. So for now, where are we? Well, in Ireland, the constitution has remained unchanged and a woman's role is defined in a way that doesn't match reality for many people. What we can do is to ensure that reality continues to be whatever you want it to be. Documents like that constitution are one data point. Do not allow it to determine your future. It also reminds us of the importance of showing up because the turnout for this referendum was much lower in part as many assumed it would go through as a change. If we want change to match our reality, as exhausting as the world feels sometimes, we must continue to show up. For our second story, how much does a political leader influence public opinion? Well, in the UK, Boris Johnson was part of that campaign. Brexit happened in part due to his rhetoric and fondness for promoting buses with incorrect data on the side. But in the US too, Trump is campaigning and winning votes despite not having the best track record, arguably. And in Argentina, their new president is seeking to sway public opinion on access to healthcare for women. Argentina's president, Javier Milei, has been in office since December last year, but it's his anti-abortion stance that is shifting attitudes and practices in women's healthcare in Argentina. The Guardian reports the concern of healthcare workers that many women will need to resort to unsafe abortions as growing numbers of doctors in Argentina are now refusing to carry out abortion procedures. As background, the president has referred to abortion when speaking to schoolchildren, yes, schoolchildren, as aggravated murder, and when speaking at the World Economic Forum to global leaders, he's called it a tragedy. That emotive language is having an effect, with one hospital physician sharing that there's even been an increased stigma for those being part of abortion teams, and another healthcare professional sharing that women don't want to go to a hospital. It's a feminist issue because pregnancy and choosing to be or not to be pregnant typically affects women's bodies and is therefore a healthcare issue. The Human Rights Watch acknowledges too that access to this healthcare and opening up to more people is relatively recent. It was a landmark 2020 case that legalized abortion for so many more people. And I also wanted to bring in some more reporting because too often when it comes to reporting about women's health issues, it feels like policy is being done to us. And Le Monde has a great piece of how Argentina's feminists are fighting back. Their article, which we've linked in our show notes, describes how groups like Ni Una Menos are fighting back. The collective, whose name means not one woman less, has seen a spike in attendance at their meetings and I quote, how these are serving as a space to highlight the conflict emerging as a consequence of the government's policies. It's a feminist issue because women's bodies and the permission of women to have greater ownership of their bodies is something we don't all agree on. And because of that, our bodies can be used as a political football that politicians bring into play when they want to detract attention from other issues. And that brings me to the financial component. The president of Argentina is facing financial problems, with inflation soaring to over 250% and poverty nearing 60%. He may therefore use populist debate to court public opinion on the issue of women's healthcare and to detract from those financial issues. And finances themselves are also being applied to this issue as a block to access. For example, a representative from Ni Una Menos articulated how public health cuts are affecting the availability of abortion pills. And the president himself, in The Guardian reporting, was also looking to remove price gaps and controls from drug prices. So what can you do? While moves like this president's making aren't happening in a bubble, we've covered abortion in other parts of the world before. So check out the fantastic work of organisations like Ni Una Menos, including those where you live, particularly if it's an issue you want to care about and support access to. Now finally, I want to give space to a woman who's been part of my childhood and who I have never ever been prouder to have been one of my childhood heroes until this week. That childhood hero is Mel B, otherwise known in the media as Scary Spice. Melanie Brown, or Mel B, has been in the news for buying her own home again, something she even doubted was possible. The BBC reporting covered how, despite earning millions from the Spice Girls, after leaving her marriage, Mel B was left with almost nothing. As Mel herself shared with the BBC on buying her house, and I quote, "I've been looking at houses on and off for the last couple of years, knowing I didn't have the money to afford them, but I just put my head down, worked, and lived frugally, and hence I've been able to buy my own house." Part of that living frugally was Mel shopping at other supermarkets like Aldi and Lidl in the UK, where you can save a bit more. And she said that's something she's never going to stop doing now. And this is both a feminist and financial issue. Let's talk about why it's a feminist issue first. It underscores the importance of talking openly about money and how powerful someone as famous as Mel B sharing her story can be. You wouldn't necessarily picture someone who's been part of an iconic band to have financial issues to the extent that they can't access capital to buy a house, but it's something that happens to many people in every industry. They just don't talk about it. There is more to this story, and Mel has shared with the BBC that, and I quote, "There was all the financial abuse too. I didn't realise that I didn't have as much money as I thought I had, so I literally had to eat humble pie, live with my mum." As background for those who aren't as familiar with Mel B's story, and we've linked the BBC article in the show notes, Mel has been a patron of the UK charity Women's Aid since 2018, and she's been campaigning for survivors of domestic abuse, so talking about the issue, particularly from a position of rebuilding, is hugely important. It's a financial issue because losing your home can happen to anyone, particularly should a relationship end. And with the housing crisis in Australia at the moment, great rentals are at a premium in capital cities. And should a relationship end, that's when power dynamics come into play. And one of a partnership is left out in the market, normally the one with less power in the relationship. That's where feminist dynamics come into play. It's a financial issue too, because Mel B, according to the BBC, as part of her divorce settlement, had to pay her ex-husband a lump sum plus $5,000 US a month in child support for their child together. That's an ongoing financial commitment that Mel needed to make while continuing to rebuild her own financial future. And that's a financial issue that many people would identify with when it comes to relationships coming to an end. And again, to have a famous person be so open about how it's affected them and how they've managed to rebuild over time is so important to raise awareness of these issues. So what can you do? I just want to take a moment to recognize Mel's mum for making her space one that was safe for Mel to come home to. Because if you've ever been through something harrowing, being able to come home is a saving grace. If you're a mum, a parent of any gender or a friend, if you're able to make that offer to welcome someone and make them feel safe in your space, you will be giving them the greatest gift of all, a space to start rebuilding in. I want to give the last words of this episode to Mel B and what The Independent have quoted her as sharing on her Instagram when she received the keys to her new home. She wrote on Instagram, 5 minutes ago, a man arrived at my door with a set of keys. They are the keys to my new home, a house I bought with the money I've worked hard to pay for. In 2019, I had to come back to Leeds with nothing in my bank account. A man's mission was to destroy me mentally, spiritually, and financially, but I wasn't going to let that happen. I had to come back to my roots, to my family in Leeds. This will be my happy home. I'm thinking about my dad, I'm thinking about my kids, and I'm thinking about all those survivors out there. You can reclaim your power, trust, and believe. If you have been through a situation like the one Mel B went through, there's a range of resources on the financialfeminist.com website, including a great organization in Australia called 1-800-RESPECT, which we've linked to on that website. That has been the news making Financial Feminist headlines this week. I've been the Financial Feminist. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Financial Feminist. Come back soon.